Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms and gardens of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. And today on In Season, I'm so happy to be talking to Jessica Tantisuk. She is one of the owners and founders of Starvation Alley Cranberries over in Long Beach. Welcome, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that we're talking. I waited to have you on the show for this time of year because this is the time of year when people think of cranberries. It's, you know, coming up on Thanksgiving and we're heading into the holidays. But I know that cranberries are year-round production for you. And you guys have been out in front on a lot of levels with cranberry growing in Washington State. Maybe talk a little bit about your farm, when it got started, and kind of your philosophy of growing.
So my partner, Jared Oakes, and I started farming cranberries anyways in 2010. So mm-hmm. prior to that, we didn't have any experience in cranberry growing specifically. We'd done a little bit of organic vegetable farming around the country, but this was totally new learning for us.
It's a very different animal.
and they grow totally differently. So
yeah.
It was definitely a lot of learning. And kind of as we were getting into like solidifying a commitment around, okay, we're gonna be cranberry growers for a while. One thing that was exciting for us was the idea of transitioning the existing cranberries from conventional growing to organic.
And how hard was, I mean, because you were the first in Washington State, weren't you? There had not been any organic cranberry growers.
Yeah.
And what did people generally tell you when you said, I'm going to be an organic cranberry grower?
I think, you know, a lot of people were like really excited, but as far as, you know, a lot of industry experts, they were pretty convinced that you couldn't do it. So when we'd call, you know, our local extension office or some of the leading cranberry institutions in the country, they said, organic cranberries, you can't do that.
And yet here you are this many years later and you've kind of proven them wrong. So, well, or proven them not completely right.
I'd say that, you know, there's been a slight shift in, you know, maybe what is just semantics. But yeah, this is our seventh, this is my seventh harvest mm-hmm. this year. And they're an annual crop,
yeah.
perennial, but we harvest once yeah. a year. And I think, yeah, it's definitely gone from you can't grow cranberries organically to it's really difficult to grow cranberries organically, which is, you know, for me, huge.
Hey, it's progress. You know,
total
that's
progress.
Totally progress. So talk a little bit about how cranberries grow, because I think a lot of people, mostly people think about cranberries, they grow in bogs. So it's really wet and the cranberries are all floating and that's not how they grow. So to explain how cranberries grow.
Yeah, well, I think that, I mean, cranberries are one of the few commodity berries that are grown in the U.S. that are native to North America, which is pretty cool. And historically, they did grow in boggy areas, so they can tolerate, you know, wet feet a lot more than other crops.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't grow in water. So a lot of the photos that you see are generally at harvest time and on farms that are wet harvesting, which means they're using water to harvest. But the rest of the year, they need dry soil, just like any other plant, so that their roots can breathe. And
do you have to irrigate them?
Yeah, no? I mean, a little bit. In the summer, for sure. I mean, we have mild summers. We were talking about that a little bit mm-hmm. earlier. But, you know, if it gets really hot, we will irrigate. And we have, you know, water that we use from a lake that's nearby our mm-hmm. farm that we can
use
the
yeah.
water from. Yeah, so we have sprinkler systems that we use for that, and then we're also preventing frost in the spring and in the fall, so we use water for, you know, a number of different things on the bog.
And then what are the biggest challenges with organic growing? Is it really just weeds and pests? Are there pests that
yeah,
bother cranberries?
There definitely is. I mean, there's a number of challenges. I mean, the kind of overarching, like, what is the challenge is mm-hmm. that there hasn't been a lot of research done with organic cranberries. So with a lot of other fruits and vegetables, extension offices and like whether it's chemical companies or whoever have spent lots of money in figuring out lots of time, mm-hmm. like figuring out like what are the best practices for growing
yeah.
those things organically, because, you know, our it seems like in general we're trending toward healthier, more organic
mm-hmm.
Foods and buying habits as consumers.
Yeah, so then it's a big difference between if you're going to rely on, you know, chemical pesticides or chemical herbicides to deal with your weeds, to deal with your pests. Now you don't have those tools available to you in your farmer toolkit. You've got to rely on organic fertilizers, which tend to be a lot more slow acting.
Yeah.
And you don't see that immediate response. You're working on, is soil building an issue there? I mean, I don't know, because I know with organic farms, a lot of times you're trying to build up the structure of your soil. You're trying to build up nutrients in your soil. You're trying to build up organic matter. Is that an issue for cranberries as well? Or yeah. is it different? Because I mean, I'm thinking it's a bog. I don't know bogs.
Yeah,
bogs
well, are... so, I mean, the way that we use water is kind of challenging for building up really healthy soil. So I think we have to learn how to do that in a slightly different way than a lot of traditional crops. But so, I mean, I would say our biggest challenge right now with organic is probably weed pressure.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a couple of major pests that we deal with. One's called black-headed fireworm.
Whoa. Black-headed fireworm?
I know,
what does that
like
look like?
They're just little worms, and they will eat the buds, and they kind of overwinter on the bottoms of the leaves and then just wreak havoc when they wake up.
Oh, man. So how do you deal with those?
Well, there's a few different things that we've found that are helpful. So we also do a spring flood, which is what looks like harvest, and that kind of drowns, you know, a lot of the pests.
Okay.
So we'll do that. We'll hold a flood on the vines for about 3 days in late spring, kind of right before the buds are really breaking. And then there's also organically approved pesticides that we can use. And, you know, like one of the myths around organic farming, I feel like the North Coast, like, you know, they're into their food. They know the difference.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the myths is that with organic farming, you're not doing anything when
you're not using any herbicides or pesticides, in which case we actually do use herbicides and pesticides. They're just certified organic.
Yeah.
They tend to have different properties. They break down differently in the environment.
And they're usually naturally derived, which is the biggest distinction.
Yeah.
And so there is a pesticide that we use that's derived from a mushroom that is seems to be great for pest control when the other things don't work. So,
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like people will make up like chili pepper sprays or garlic sprays to spray on, you know, aphids or things like that, and that's a pesticide.
And so
anything
that's
going to kill a pest is a pesticide.
Totally.
It may just be organic, but it's different. So it's just, you know, like you said, it's semantics.
Yeah.
But so you're finding some options for you that are helping.
And
but that's
is...
a lot of trial and error. Because probably the first year that you got those fireworms, you know, what did you do?
They ate all the buds. Yeah, I think it has been trial and error, which is expensive for small farms. So we're a 10-acre farm, and our bogs are in two different chunks. And one's located on the 101 cutoff just in Seaview, Washington, and then one's a little bit further north in Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And, and at the beginning, I think a lot of, like, we had a pretty significant loss in yield in the first couple of years, and I think that was largely due to being new farmers. So it wasn't totally the switch to organic, which is also, you know, like you talked about, been a pretty big challenge. And
but it's a learning curve. I mean, it's a steep learning curve when you start farming, especially if you don't have experience growing that crop.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't know. There's like subtle timing and things that you learn over time, your experience.
Just how to look at the plant, even.
Yeah.
You can
tell what stage it's at. So you know, oh, hey, it's time to flood the field. And if we do that for this long, it'll still be okay. Whereas, you know, the first year you're doing that, you may be guessing and you guess wrong. And then you're really sorry.
Yeah, totally.
So that's got to feel good that you've learned a lot of those things. And
so we're making progress. And one of the things that's helped us make progress, too, is a couple years in, we realized we're starting to gather up this organic knowledge base, and we didn't really want to just have that be internal to our business. We were excited about sharing that with other growers, and so we were like, okay, what does it look like to have a business that works with other farmers? And you know, one thing I'm really proud of that we've done in the last few years is bring on other organic and transitional organic farmers in both Oregon and Washington. So we had our first two other farms in Long Beach that we've been working with for 4 years get certified organic this year, which is really exciting.
That's
so we're not the only organic farm in Washington anymore, which is actually like the whole entire goal, and we're pretty stoked about it.
That's so amazing. Did you reach out to them, or did they reach out to you? Were they curious about what you were doing?
It's been a hybrid. So like I said, we're working with five farms right now, including ours, and some of them have been people that we either know around the community and have talked to and kind of built relationships with over time. And have been like, hey, like, what's it going to take to get you to transition to organic? And then some have been, you know, our last grower that we just added down in Bandon definitely reached out to us and was like, I heard that, you know, you're wanting organic growers. Like, what does that look like for us? Like, would you be willing to work with us? And they were a pretty small farm, so we decided to add them this year.
That's so great. So they're growing berries. And then, so the other thing that's unique about your business model is that you are not just the grower of the berries, but you're also the processor and the packager and the distributor of your end products.
Yeah.
So that's a lot to take on.
Totally.
It's enough to just be the farmer, and yet you're doing all the other end as well. So for these other growers, are they then selling you their berries, and then are you adding them into your processed product?
Yes, we are. And I mean, and that decision didn't come lightly, you know, like we did start out as just being really excited about being innovative on the farming side. And then with our reduction in yields, we kind of had to make the decision, okay, to make this financially viable, at least in the short term, we're going to have to value add some products.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think working with other growers has been fun too, because again, we're kind of just collecting knowledge together, mm-hmm. but we are buying their fruit from them. And mm-hmm. the fun thing that we've done with our other farmers is buy their transitional organic fruit, which is pretty difficult to sell. So we're buying it for a premium.
And explain why that's why it's difficult to sell.
So with organic standards, they don't let you say the word, you can't write the word organic on any package that isn't through that entire 3-year process. And so I can't say, like, these are transitional organic berries. You know, we put, like, transitional berries on packages, and people are like, transitioning from what to what? So it's pretty hard to educate the consumer or tell the story about, like, okay, you know, you're buying these berries and they cost a little bit more, but really it's because you're supporting growers that are pretty excited about making this pretty difficult transition to organic, and it's going to take them 3 years, and in the meantime they have to
they
deal
can't
with loss
label
of yields
them as,
and more expensive chemicals. And
So that's cool. And talk a little bit about the kinds of products that you guys have started making. I mean, you have a juice that I know you're quite famous for, but there's other things that you do as well.
Famous might be a strong word.
I think you're famous. You guys were just profiled in Sunset Magazine. It's the latest edition of it. It was amazing. I was down in California recently at my mother-in-law's house, and I'm flipping through her Sunset Magazine. I'm like, it's Jessica and Jared in Sunset Magazine standing in their cranberry bog. That's the coolest thing. I mean, that's a lot of...
I did get asked for my autograph at the post office the other day, which is totally like...
But that's
what's happening?
Aside from the fact that that's really cool. But it's really cool. I mean, because you're bringing a lot of awareness to the fact that you're doing this organic growing in an area which is also very ecologically sensitive.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of wetlands and wildlife habitat.
And we're using water directly
area.
Out of that, as we talked about.
Exactly.
So, I mean, whatever we're putting in our farm is definitely going into the local watershed. And where we are specifically, I mean, Bay is half a mile from Massalipaw Bay. And then we have the ocean, which is probably half a mile on the other side. And then we're right on the river. So...
I mean, it is really important. I know you were talking about over time trying to calculate how much, you know, herbicide, pesticide have you kept out of the waterways? Have you kept out of the ecosystem from doing this transition?
So we worked with the Center for Alternative Pesticides on just trying to calculate how much synthetic chemicals go into an acre of conventional bogs each year. And it's about 100 pounds. So we've estimated in the, like, 6.5 years that we've been doing this, it's probably been about 13,000 pounds of synthetic chemicals that we've kept out of the local watershed, which is really cool.
That's amazing.
It's a huge number.
That's really amazing for those very sensitive ecosystems. And then as you add more farms, you know, that are transitioning to organic, that's also their farms that are now not putting pesticides.
And so that's the environmental side, which I'm really excited about. And I guess on the flip side of that, you know, we've paid probably like $250,000 to local farmers to help them do that, which is the other pretty cool social piece of it.
Absolutely. I mean, there's that economic ecosystem that I think is so important. I mean, it's one of the things that I'm so excited about with the kind of resurgence of farming in the Lower Columbia region as a whole, is that these are all local businesses selling to other locals. I mean, you are distributing now, you know, regionally, which is really exciting. But a lot of that economic money is then coming back into our local community that you're then distributing through paying your growers and buying and jobs and things like that. And that's so exciting to see happening. And I think really demonstrating the best of, like, this, the kind of evolution of farming, I think, where it is more local and regional. It's so exciting to see happening. I'm just really impressed with what you guys are doing. And before I get too excited, I'm going to take a moment and remind everybody that we are listening to Coast Community Radio. Well, I'm speaking on Coast Community Radio. You're listening to it at KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. We are streaming live at coastradio.org, and you can listen on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. And if you are just joining me, I am talking all about cranberries with Jessica Tantisook of Starvation Alley Cranberries in Long Beach, Washington. Before we go too much further, many people know the story, but a lot of people don't. Starvation Alley, what's with that name? It's a weird name. It's a great name. It's very memorable, but why is it called Starvation Alley?
So it's a historic place name on the peninsula, and it was endearingly nicknamed during the Great Depression era, and it was where a lot of the migrant not even migrant, but like day laborers lived for the cranberry and oyster industry.
Mm-hmm.
And they had somewhat of like a shanty town set up in the middle of the peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
And the road didn't have an official name until I think the 90s. It was just Route 1, but a lot of the locals called it Starvation Alley. And from I took this local historian class, just I guess plug for the Columbia Pacific Heritage Museum here, last year, and got to learn a little bit more about the history of Starvation Alley, which was really fun.
That's so cool.
Yeah, and they had a saying that was "Tides out, table set," and so even though they were living these like relatively like grueling, probably low paying lives, they were able to, when the tide was out, go out and gather like steamer clams and oysters and pick mushrooms and berries. And they had this sense of community there. And it seemed to me to be around food somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
It was still, pretty high quality for the circumstances. And I think that they were, you know, pretty stoked. And we kept the name because it feels like it resonates with us still. And we're
absolutely
happy to have that connection to, you know, where our business is located and the history.
Yeah. Well, and it's wonderful, too, when you take a historical name like that, that is also kind of unusual. In the naming it, people are always going to ask you, well, what is that all about? And then you get to repeat the history of the region and educate people about the history of the region and where it's come from. I think that's a wonderful story. And
I haven't been able to make it very concise yet. So
that's kind of
trouble.
Long,
you know, people just look at our packaging and they're like, what in the world is happening here? Why is there a food company called Starvation Alley Farms?
So talk a little bit. So you do all these value add products. Well, all. I mean, you don't have a huge range, but you do some more and more. Talk about the value add products you made. And when we talk about value add, that's like when you take the raw ingredients and then you process it into something that is packaged and sold.
Yeah.
Talk about what
so,
you do.
So our flagship product is 100% pure cranberry juice. So it's unsweetened and it's never been heated, which is pretty unique. So there, you can find 100% cranberry juices. They're generally shelf stable.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, that changes the flavor quite a bit and probably the health properties as well. But it loses that like really bright like fruit flavor that gives it some balance to the tartness.
Mm-hmm.
And so our juice, I don't know, I feel like it's way more palatable than what you would expect from 100% cranberry juice. And we have a lot of excited customers that do just drink it straight. They'll take like a shot of it in the morning. But
it's not the kind of thing you'd sit down and have a huge glass of.
No,
like a huge
no.
glass of orange juice. I mean, it's an intense juice.
Yeah. I mean, we'll have people that don't drink, like put it in a wine glass and drink it like as a sipper with their dinner. But usually I'll put an ounce in like my morning smoothie or a glass of soda water or cocktails.
Yeah, you've got quite a cocktail following in the region. Is there a favorite cocktail that someone makes with your juice, or how do you pick your favorite cocktail?
It's hard. So one that's probably my favorite, which came from Pelicano, which is over in Owako, was tequila and grapefruit simple, lime and cranberry.
Ooh.
It's really delicious.
That sounds really nice. Well, and the tartness of the cranberry really lends itself to that. And I've seen you've also shared a lot of great recipes over time. I see sometimes on your farm's Facebook page. There was one for a cranberry relish. Was it like a savory relish or something? Or it had cilantro in it. There was something else. It was like, I remember looking at it and thinking, I would never have thought to use cranberries that way, but that is so awesome. And there's so many different ways that people are using cranberries now.
Yeah.
That really lend themselves to cooking way beyond just holiday dishes. And it's fascinating. I was thinking about this as I was driving in that, you know, my main memory as a child of cranberries is like just that cranberry relish at Thanksgiving. And it usually came in a can. And it was this kind of a horrible kind of like goo. And it's like, you know, just like it kind of slid out of the can kind of hole and put, and you still see like the marks of the can.
Oh, yeah.
And then you'd like just cut off pieces of it. It was like kind of jellied cranberry. And that was cranberries to me. And
80 million of those sell each year.
I know, but now cranberries are kind of in everything, and they do have great health properties.
Yeah, and so I think, yeah, so we made a sauce this year, which we're excited about. We made three different flavors. I think the Astoria Co-op has all of them, but there's a citrus and a spiced and then a classic, which is more or close to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And then it's made with our transitional organic berries and organic sugar, which is pretty cool. But then, like, I think part of our business challenge is to not be just a seasonal product. So cranberries are this amazing superfruit that we're lucky to have locally. And how can we give excited consumers recipes or whatever it takes to get them excited about it in other times of year? Because they preserve really well. So we freeze most of our fruit at harvest because we do wet harvest them. Their shelf life is pretty short. So we'll freeze it all at harvest. But then...
So do you sell frozen cranberries as well? Just whole frozen cranberries?
Yeah, we do.
So you have packaging. So if people want to get cranberries, you know, in March or April.
We're actually going to be, I can't remember exactly what they're calling the market, but they're doing like a little holiday market in Astoria that we're going to have berries coming up really soon.
It's at North Coast Food Web's building here in Astoria.
I need to look.
I feel embarrassed to say this, but there is going to be a holiday before Thanksgiving farmer's market. I'm sure if you call North Coast Food Web, they'll be able to tell you.
Or look on their Facebook.
Or look on their page. Yeah, I think it's northcoastfoodweb.org. Or look up for the Facebook and they'll tell you. And I know there's going to be different farmers there that are going to be selling products for your holiday tables. Yeah. So go check out Starvation Alley.
And we have our fruit and juice available kind of scattered across Astoria and the peninsula all year round.
Yeah. So, and then how far do you distribute?
Right now we're pretty much Oregon, Washington, and we just got into a platform called Good Eggs that's like doing direct sales in San Francisco. So that's kind of... I wouldn't say we're like all in California, but we're in one small part of San Francisco and then, you know, most of the major like cities and regions in Oregon and Washington.
So do you find now that are you still out in the fields doing the weeding and the pest control? Or are you, you know, stuck in the office on the computer doing the marketing distribution?
Mostly the latter. So these days, with the exception of harvest, in which I spend a ton of time on the farm, I don't get to be out there every day just because how vertically integrated our business is. We're doing too many things. And honestly, we try to assess, like, who's most qualified to do what, and I probably belong more on the marketing side.
So you're not the one out there in your waiters?
Oh, totally.
Well, for harvest. So for harvest, you are.
Yeah.
But on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, not as much as I was in the first few years that we were here.
But the nice thing about you having done that is that you understand the process and you understand how things are grown.
So I work with farmers quite a bit. So a lot of it is coordinating with our growers and coming up with, you know, what our plans are for the following years and, you know, how they're growing, doing. This year, I guess another thing we're really excited about is we're planning the first annual organic cranberry conference, which is going to be in February. So, you know, working with our growers and working with Oregon Tilth to put that together. So I'm doing stuff related to farming, but as far as actually like going out there and looking at the cranberries every day, that's not really my job anymore.
So it'll be a conference just for cranberry growers?
I think it could be cranberry growers and stakeholders and maybe just interested parties, but I think it'll be focused on largely on giving people that are interested in the organic process or that are in the organic process tools to succeed throughout the year.
That's a very cool thing to do. Yeah. And is that going to be hosted in in this area?
Yeah, it's going to be hosted actually in Owako.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work to put on a conference.
Yeah, well, like I said, Oregon Tilth is helping, so we're kind of doing it together. And I think that's my favorite thing to work on, so it doesn't feel like work to me. It's really exciting.
Well, and you're also going out into the world, too, and doing a lot of speaking as well on, you know, about the kind of work that you do. One of the things that I know that you do that I find really admirable is the business structure that you chose. You are something called a B Corporation.
So actually, B Corp is more like an organic certification. Okay. So it's a third-party certification.
Well, so explain.
We're an SPC. Is that what you're thinking?
Okay. Maybe. So what? Explain that.
Yeah. Okay. So a B Corp is, if you know much about the organic certification, it pretty much focuses solely on food.
Mm-hmm.
And B Corp or B Lab, who has created the B Corp certification, is more for any business. So if you were... a marketing agency or a law firm or something, you could get a B Corp certification. And they look more holistically at your business practices. So it is more triple bottom line focus. So, you know, where you're sourcing things, how much you're paying people, what's your energy usage.
Mm-hmm.
Where organic certification is really like a consumer health facing label. And then as far as like how we're incorporated, Washington State gives you the option of being a social purpose corporation, which is an SPC. And it functions for all tax purposes like a corporation, but it allows you to write a mission or purpose into your bylaws. So Starvation Alley's reason for existing is to support farmer livelihood and to reduce agriculture's negative impacts on the environment.
So those are really cool things that you can have in your mission. And as you become more successful and make more money, the fact that you're channeling profits into those areas of your business are acceptable in business.
Well, most
practice.
Corporations are obligated to make decisions solely based on the bottom line.
Yeah.
And so it gives us the option of saying, actually, we'll definitely keep that in consideration. You can't mm-hmm. do of any course, good yeah. without, you know, yeah. making a successful business. But also just saying like, okay, these are other considerations that we've all agreed on from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So how are you feeling now? It's been, 7 years? Just about since you started. What do you feel like, what are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned in those 7 years? You've come a long way.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one that I refer to the most is probably just the lessons about organic. And I think we've talked about this mm-hmm. maybe a little bit before, but I think my just paradigm about organic has shifted a lot. And I think sometimes conventional and organic get pinned against each other. And really, I mean, organic growing is on a long spectrum of ways that you can grow. And, you know, we're dealing with a monoculture commodity crop, and there's probably mm-hmm. no way I can grow that the best way in the mm-hmm. world, as hard as I try. I mean, really, farms should probably look more like your farm, where they're different. I mean, maybe not. But
well,
like,
but even our farm is not a natural system. I mean, nature would never normally sort itself out into rows of non-native vegetables and flowers. I mean,
sure.
It just isn't. If you're farming, you're doing something that's technically not natural.
Yeah.
It's just how you choose to interact with the...
How
the,
you can
yeah.
kind of pay attention to what nature's doing and either emulate it or make decisions that at least aren't totally destroying whatever else is around the farm. So I think, you know, we came out of the gates pretty hot about not even making, like, really strong organic claims, but just being like, organic farming is the way it should be. And I think I learned the lesson pretty quickly is one way that you can do things, but really, like, most farmers are just excited to be in their community, and they're working really hard, and they're, like,
yeah.
not making a ton of money, and so they're doing it because it's, like, a labor of love, and I think, you know, if our business can give them other options, and if we can get research done about how to grow organically, like, maybe more people will have that as an option they can do, but in no way would I advise most growers to try to go down the path that we have, because it's been really difficult. And if we had a family that was reliant upon income, I mean, it would have been non-existent, and
yeah,
we would have, you know, crashed yeah. and burned a long time ago.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of options out there, and it's great that you're doing this kind of pioneering work. So for people who are interested in following that path, they can look to you for some resources and information. So if people want to know more about your farm and they want to know where to get your products, what are the ways that they can find you on the internet, like your website, Facebook?
Yeah, you can go to our website. We're in the process of updating it right now. We just added online shipping and sales, and we're trying to add more content there. We also are pretty...
It's Starvation Alley.
StarvationAlley.com,
okay.
And then we also have a pretty active, like, Facebook and Instagram. So if you're interested in looking at
yeah.
pretty photos of cranberries, yeah. check
and,
it out.
And I will say this, their website and their photographs are beautiful. You should definitely go follow them and check it out, because it's very inspiring. I look at them and go, oh my God, I want my farm to look like that. I know. Anyway, we are out of time, and Kate is looking at me saying, wrap it up, Teresa. So I'm going to wrap it up and say thank you so much, Jessica.
Thanks
for talking
having
to
me.
Us. Yeah, I really enjoy the conversation. Thanks. And thank you for joining us today on In Season. Mm-hmm.